Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
Welcome, 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 ladies and gentlemen, to another Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I am your host, Colton Molesky, and on the line, Brendan Scarborough, the fantastic and phenomenal broadcaster out of Northwestern in St. Paul. Brendan, thanks for coming on the show again.
Absolutely. Nowhere I'd rather be.
That's what I like to hear. And so, obviously, some big breaking news in the NBA, but before we get to the process, I wanted to just go over the final preseason game for the Timberwolves. It was their second game in China against the Golden State Warriors, and I'm definitely not going to overreact to a preseason game, but it was a little troubling to see a team that wanted to work on defense over the offseason give up 142 points, even if it's a preseason game. I don't know. How do you feel about it?
Yeah, it's a preseason game, and we're still seeing things are getting worked out. Things they're playing with new teammates. Everything's going well. On the plus side, the Wolves end the preseason 2-1. You know, they looked really good, and yes, this was a bad game, and this they do want to work on defense. And I say, why not play the best and see where you stand? And I think this is a great opportunity for the Wolves to see where holes in their defense may lie. As you said, don't overreact too much by it, but I think it's a good indicator to see where the Wolves are at right now.
Just some initial takeaways from the game. Obviously, Curry is still Curry, 31 minutes, 40 points. He shot 13 for 20. He had 6 three-pointers, 9 attempts. Just the Warriors dominating, especially from deep. They shot 62% from behind the three-point line, 60% from the field. As far as the defense for the Wolves, this was kind of the same thing we saw last season a little bit. They started out really well. They started out with 44 points in the first quarter. They had a pretty bad second quarter. They were beat 40-28 in the second quarter. But then you kind of just see over the course of those next three quarters after a strong opening, just a little bit of eroding. I'm not sure if it's so much that they didn't have a ton of starters. Most of their starters played about half the game. So I really don't like, really, if I'm looking at the first two quarters, right, because the starters played about 25 minutes around there on average for each of the five. And so that's the first two quarters, and I really don't like what I saw in the second quarter where they were beat 40-28. Just some of the stuff the Warriors were doing, they looked really good on screens and on picks, guys just breaking away from the defense and getting open. I really wasn't super pleased with that. It looks like there's still some stuff that needs to be figured out switching-wise. But as far as that first quarter, I think that's a glimpse of what you can see from the Wolves going forward. If you want to take a silver lining from this, again, it's just a preseason game, but a silver lining from this would be in the first quarter, they beat the Warriors. They looked really good, really crisp on both sides of the ball, I think. And so that's what I'm going to take away, is that's probably the ceiling of where this team can go, is putting together a ton of games like that.
Yeah, I agree. And then also looking at the three-point shooting from the Warriors, as we know, as you said, the Warriors are the Warriors. You have Klay Thompson going 8-for-10, Steph Curry 6-for-9, Kevin Durant 2-for-4, Draymond Green 2-for-4. You really got to limit outside shooting opportunities, especially in the West. You have really good three-point shooting teams, like you got the Warriors. You have the Rockets, even adding Chris Paul. That's a huge offensive outlet that they have there. Definitely going to need to step up on the perimeter defense. But as of right now, as you said, the first quarter, it looks really good. 44-36 against the reigning champions. It's not a bad place to be right now.
Well, and again, just going over minutes, Wiggins had 24 minutes. Teague had 25. Towns had 24. Butler had 29. Gibson had 24. So it's not like the whole game was kind of representative of what the team is going to look like by any stretch. This was only half a game from these guys. But just as far as that first couple quarters – I really think that there's something there on offense, and I think it's, and we've talked about this before, I think it's what we've been saying all offseason, where the defense and just how these guys play together on defense, and we know in pretty much every, in basketball and football especially, even like hockey, even baseball, defense is so much about just reaction and knowing who's around you and how they react to stuff and how you react to stuff is so much a part of defense that it's going to take a little time. But again, I need to see, you're right, you need to see them get out on the edge a little better. You need to see the wings really make the game difficult on the perimeter, not just in the paint. And the Warriors are the Warriors, and they're going to shoot well from three, but you need it to be better contested, I feel like.
And so, I agree.
Well,
I agree.
One of the things I was noting as well, if you're just watching the game, Wiggins looks pretty solid on offense. He finished with 21 points, led the team in points. Defense was in and out, but offensively he looked pretty solid. Towns had the 16 points. Did you want to see more shots from Butler? He only had 6 shots, or did you want to see, or were you fine with him kind of letting other people shoot? And he did get to the free throw line a lot. He shot 10 free throws in the game, so it was 9 of 10 from the charity stripe. Were you fine with him kind of being in that role where he was letting other guys shoot and just driving to the basket to get to the line to get those free buckets, especially for him? He's a good free throw shooter, but do you want to see him shoot more? Were you fine with it, that role, or do you think it's kind of one of those things where you take it game by game? If Wiggins is hot, let him shoot.
I think it's something that you take game by game. And if you're Jimmy Butler, and he is, he might not have the experience yet, but I feel like he's going to quickly need to learn that, hey, when this person's hot, let them shoot. And you said that he did a great job of it against the Warriors. But at the same time, if the offense is going a little slowly, if you're only putting up 28 points in a quarter, hey, you're the guy that they're going to lean on for offensive production. So at the same point, as quickly as he is to pass the ball and get his teammates open, get his teammates better looks, he also needs to be ready to take shots if he needs to.
And then just some of the other new additions, Taj Gibson. I think one of the big storylines over the preseason was his three-point shooting and how well he was doing. In this game, he only had 5 shots, 1 three-point attempt, and had 8 points. This is probably more of the realistic version of Taj Gibson, isn't it?
This probably is. He's not going to be jacking up a lot of threes. But when we saw in the first game against the Lakers, he did go 2 for 2. So I think it's off and on. I don't think this is someone that you would rely on for three-point shooting.
Right. It feels like game was more of a tempering of expectations. I think fans can easily get excited about, ooh, is he going to be popping 5 or 6 threes a game? And this is more of what we're going to see from Taj Gibson, I feel like.
You also have to remember that he is playing against probably the best defensive power forward in the game in Draymond Green. So Draymond will limit your three-point shoot. Draymond's not going to let you get any free shots inside or out. But I think that we could see his three-point production go higher than we've seen it in the past, but not as high as some people are saying.
Yeah, and like we keep prefacing with all this, is that it is just preseason. You don't want to take away too much from it. Just looking at the scope, we saw that was their last preseason game, obviously. So now, between us and that October 18th date of the opener in San Antonio, it's just kind of us speculating again on how this team is going to look. After 3 games, what are your just a couple general takeaways you have from the Timberwolves, stuff you like, stuff you didn't like? How do you feel about this team now that you've actually seen them play some actual games?
I like them. I think the Timberwolves going forward, I think they have a bright future, as we've said before. The Golden State Warriors can put up 142 on anybody, I feel like. We saw them do it against the Cavs in the playoffs. We've seen them do it against we've seen them dismantle the Spurs. They can do this to anybody. I think this is a good indication of what, as I said before, a good indication of what Minnesota needs to work on, where they're at right now. But as a takeaway, I think they look great. We forget, but yes, they did lose 142, but they are leaving the preseason right now. They stand 2-1, and they look really good doing it. I think the team is gelling well together, and I'm very excited to see what they have this year.
And you're absolutely right, too. Like, if you're testing out your team in games that don't matter, how great is it to be kind of using these games that you're supposed to be seeing how good you are to be measuring yourself against the best team in the NBA, right? Like, isn't the Warriors the team you kind of want to play in the preseason just to see where you are as far as, like, this is the team that they're going to, if you want to win a championship at some point in the NBA, this is the team you're going to have to beat, because this team is going to be around for at least a couple more years. So if you want to win, if you want to at least be contesting for a championship in the next 5 years, you're probably going to have to face some version of this team. So why not see the beginning stages of your build against this team? Like, this is a perfect way to start out the season, is to say, okay, we played the Warriors twice. What do we do well? What do we not do well? We need to defend the three a little better, maybe spread the floor a little bit more against them, force them to come out a little bit more against our three-point shooting. This is a great way to see where you are as a team when the games don't actually count for anything.
I agree. I think this is really good for the Timberwolves going forward. And as you said, this is going to be a team that the NBA as well as the West is going to have to deal with for a few years. And you know what? This is a team that they're comparing to Michael Jordan's Bulls. I feel like any team in the NBA would love to get the opportunity to play against a historic team like that. So why not do that here? Why not test your team? The Timberwolves look good, in my opinion.
What did you think about Clay's comments about comparing the Warriors to the Bulls?
It's people are fishing for a story in any way possible.
That's true. It's been a long summer, I feel like, for some NBA reporters.
Yeah. I agree. If you are the Warriors at this point, if you're any team, you want to be the best. You have LeBron James chasing Michael Jordan's shadow in the terms of being the best player of all time. The Warriors are chasing the Bulls' shadow in terms of being the best team of all time. I think in any sense, you're chasing somebody. And I agree with, like, this is what they should be doing. You should be chasing the next best thing. I don't know if I agree with it or what, but as you said, it's been a long offseason, and people just want to see the NBA again.
Absolutely. I think one of the things I would probably take away from the preseason, I know it's been well documented, especially Tom Schreier calls me this all the time. He says I'm a Ricky Rubio hater. I'm really excited about Teague and the way he looked. I thought he kind of showed us a little bit of both sides, because he had some really nice shooting in the first game against the Warriors. He looked pretty good on offense. And then this game, he only had 10 points, only shot the ball 5 times, but he had 4 assists. He had 2 rebounds. I like that in 2 games I can see somebody who is really confident with the basketball and confident in creating his own shot, and that in the second game I can see somebody who's just going to get to the free throw line, make his free throws, and pass the ball around, make other people around him good as well. I really like a point guard that can do both, and I know that the third thing that I really like about Teague that I'm not sure we saw totally yet, but I think he's a good off-ball point guard as well. I think he's kind of like a poor man's Kyle Lowry, where Lowry's got a great shot, better than Teague's. You'll get no argument from me. It's better than Teague's. But at the same time, Teague can still do plenty of stuff off the ball and in transition without the ball in his hands. And I think that adds another layer of what he can do as a point guard and what he can give this team at the point guard position, just because with guys like Butler and Wiggins and Towns, they're going to be taking plenty of shots every night. So he's not going to have a ton of shots night in and night out available to him. I like that he gives you all those different phases of his game and offers them to this team. So I think he'll be a really nice addition, a really nice piece over the course of the season. And I like that we were already seeing that this preseason. But that's just something I took away. I am a big T fan. I wasn't a huge Rubio fan, so I think it'll be an upgrade of that position. What do you think? Do you think Teague will make this roster better?
I absolutely think so. And don't get me wrong, Ricky Rubio is a good player. I really enjoyed watching him. As you said, I wasn't a huge fan, but at the same time, Ricky Rubio, some of the passes that he would make, absolutely astonishing. I think that Jeff Teague is, I think he's a step up, especially being that he can shoot. As I've said before, you want a point guard who, when they're coming up the floor, especially in the critical minutes of a basketball game, you're afraid, hey, this guy could shoot as well as pass the ball. And that is something that Jeff Teague does. As well as you were saying, he does well off the ball. And with a lineup like the Timberwolves have, when you have players like Andrew Wiggins, when you have players like Butler, when you have players like Karl Anthony Towns, you're going to need a guy who can do stuff with the ball as well as off the ball. When those key players have the ball in their hands, is the spacing going to be good? Is the movement going to be good? You really want a flowing, concise offense, and I think that Jeff Teague allows the Timberwolves to do that. I think that they're better off with Teague than they would have been with Rubio.
I would definitely agree with you there. Overall, what is your grade for the Timberwolves preseason? Just if you were to throw a quick grade on there.
Quick grade, I would say B+.
Yeah, I'm right there
yes,
with you.
It was 142 to 110, but again, we can't forget. Like, we can't forget. This was one of the best teams of all time. No argument there. This is one of the best teams of all time. And you know what? For the most part, they've hung with them. And I think, and especially it's a new team, it's a young team. But from right now, this is a great starting spot to be in. If I'm the manager, I'm like, wow, we have these guys for a few years. They've got a lot of firepower, and it's going to be very exciting in the next few years. We're going to have to worry about the Warriors, but people are also going to have to worry about the Timberwolves as well.
Well, and if I'm looking forward to the San Antonio game on October 18th, even though that's on the road, I mean, this team put up, and again, I know it's just preseason, but this team did put up over 100 points in all three of the preseason games. Like, if I'm looking at San Antonio and now Kawhi is going to be still dealing with injury when the season opener comes around and they didn't have a whole lot of oomph added to their roster after losing in the playoffs last year, where is there on the San Antonio roster? Just a quick look ahead. This isn't a preview of San Antonio, so I don't want to spend a ton of time on it, but just looking ahead quickly at San Antonio, can they hang with a team that potentially can put up about 100 points a night? Like, I don't know where they're getting that offense from, especially if Kawhi's not there.
Especially if Kawhi's not there. And we saw it last year in the playoffs. When Kawhi goes down, Kawhi is the integral piece of that offense. He's people underestimate Kawhi. Some people do, not a lot do, but some people do. And Kawhi is just so good all around. We've seen the defensive blocks. We've seen him shut down players. But on the offensive side of the ball, Kawhi can do it all. And he, especially with, you know, Tony Parker gone, with Tim Duncan gone, and Manu Ginobili aging. You know, they need people to step up, and the younger people, and Kawhi Leonard's the guy to do that. He's a huge part of the offense, and it looks good for the Timberwolves right now going into San Antonio.
Yeah, I had that when the season schedule initially came out, and I wrote a piece on that, an article on that, on Zone Coverage. By the way, all our listeners should definitely go check out Zone Coverage and look at all the great content. Tim Fakeless and I are going to have tons of stuff coming out every week covering the Timberwolves and all their games and news, everything like that. Go check out Zone Coverage. But when I was looking at this game to start the season, I kind of listed it as one of the highlights of the season just because it'd be a good test of the team right away, right out the gate, to see where their mindset is coming right out of the gate to open up the season, how they're going to fare in that first month, a good test of this team. And now I'm thinking that test might not come until they play OKC after a few games playing the Westbrook, Paul George, and Carmelo Anthony trio, just because without Kawhi Leonard, it's kind of a lot of B-, C-plus guys. And if you're a San Antonio fan, it's got to be a little discouraging that you don't have that kind of next guy that they're developing and working on that has the potential for an all-star. Like they had when they were battling with the Heat, they had this guy, Kawhi Leonard, that was coming up and was, if he worked on this one thing, he was going to be a really good all-around player when they had this star-studded cast. And now you look at it and they have one guy, and LaMarcus Aldridge is this guy who's kind of in this limbo, and he really wants the offense ran through him, but I don't think the Spurs are ever going to run an offense through him. And you've got all these young guys that are kind of just B+, C- guys. I don't see where the next step for San Antonio is as clearly as I did in the past for them.
I agree. One of the tough thing about San Antonio is when they've had the big three for so long, and now that the three is aging, with Manu Ginobili looking like he's probably going to retire the next season if he hasn't really said what he's going to do yet. Tony Parker, I said before that he was retired. Excuse me, he's not. He's looking to play three more seasons, but he's not as big as a contributor as he has been in the past. Yeah, Paul Gasol. Paul Gasol is, you know, I would say that he's definitely past his prime as well. And LaMarcus Aldridge, a little quieter than they would like him to be. But as you said, there's nobody when looking at the roster that jumps out of the page and that is like, wow, that person's going to be very exciting. That's a player that's going to be a big part of this team.
Like, is Simmons really the rising star for them?
Say it one more time.
Like, is Simmons really the rising star that this team has to look to for the next guy up?
I would say so. There's nobody really here who's that exciting, you know? You have London Perantes from Virginia, but I mean, you know, we'll see what he does in the NBA. As of right now, Simmons might be the most exciting guy, or the most like person that they're going to look forward to, or at least look to, come the future of the Spurs franchise.
Yeah, it's interesting, and it seems like a trap to kind of doubt a Popovich team, but I do like that matchup. I think that one could be maybe possibly a little easier than we thought when we started out the summer to start the season for the Timberwolves. So Brandon and I both, it sounds like, agree. Like if you're a better, go ahead and take the Timberwolves money line for that season opener. And I did want to get to finally the big news of the day. Joel Embiid, the process, he's getting paid, Brennan. 5 years, $148 million for a guy who's played 31 games, just 31 games. I just want to ask you, did you strap up the shoes and throw on the jersey to try and get just 31 NBA games under your belt to get that big payday?
I was thinking about it. I was in the process of stretching when I did hear about this. So I think my chances are pretty high. You know what, Colton? I will take a third of it for just playing in a few NBA games. I don't know what the managers and GMs are willing to offer me as of right now. The 3-point shot's looking a little good, but perimeter defense might not be as high.
That's true. How much could you get for 5 games? How much could you get for 5 games from the 76ers?
I don't know, but I don't know how I feel about paying this much money for a guy that played 31 games. I'm unsure.
And I know people say, well, they have, it looks like they're going to have in the contract. It was Bleacher Report that I saw this on, and it looks like they're going to have in the contract some stipulations about if he misses a certain amount, X amount of games, how much that'll cost him. But gosh, and I know he's going to be a generational center. He's supposed to be this guy with all this tremendous upside, and when he was playing, he was just phenomenal. He was so much fun to watch, and he changed the 76ers team. But 31 games, I mean, that is such a small sample size. And really, this 76ers team is all about hoping that all these guys pan out, because Ben Simmons, with the injury, obviously had to postpone his rookie season. Markelle Fultz had the injury in summer league, and so we're hoping that he can stay healthy if you're a 76ers fan. And now this 31 game prospect kind of is going to get paid the 5-year $148 million deal to hopefully lead this franchise into some relevance. And it's just, they're putting their money where their mouth is, and they're putting all their money on these draft picks that they've been working so hard and so long to develop and gather. But at the same time, it seems like a bit of an unnecessary risk.
Yeah, it's very – a risk is definitely the word that I would use. Paying this much money for a guy, again, so little games. The problem is with this is that he has a tremendous upside. Joel Embiid looks good when he plays at the top of his game. There's no doubting that. Joel Embiid's an all-star when he's playing at the top of his game. But, and there's a huge but to it, is that can he play the full 62? And that's been the curse of the 76ers, I swear. Can they play the full 72? And that, if he can, then great. More power to him. They've signed a great prospect for 5 years. I would also say that he's definitely one of the better looking centers in the NBA, and if he can play the full 62, I think it was a great sign. But we'll see. Only time can tell.
Yeah, he's got to get through 82 games, right? And the other thing too is it makes me reminiscent a little bit of Blake Griffin, right? And I don't want to say a player is injury prone after just a couple seasons, but there is, at the same time, there is potential for that. You saw this in college, coming out of college, in the NBA. He's struggling to stay on the court. Did you just sign up for 5 years of a guy who's really going to struggle just to show up for games without seeing what his ceiling is? And if we had gone through this entire season, and say he doesn't even play the whole 82 games, say he just plays like 73 games, but they were really, really good games and he made an all-star team, you know what? Maybe you have to put the injury problems to the side and just say, this guy is an all-star, maybe a transcending talent. You got to sign up no matter what. But that's the thing we're going to keep coming back to here is the sample size is so small. I really don't know what they signed up for, honestly, because we can talk about ceilings all we want, but when we only have 31 games to base what we think his ceiling is going to be, it's really hard for, in my mind, it's really hard to justify that big price tag. And so my question for you, Brendan, is what price tag looked good? If you're the 76ers and you felt like you had to pay him some or give him some kind of contract extension, what is that number? What year amount and what dollar amount were you comfortable giving him on just 31 games?
For just 31.
And that's the question too, is that the 76ers didn't just do this because Joel Embiid said, no, I can do it. I can play 82 games for at least 4 years. They did this because they really felt like they had a shot at maybe losing him, or they wanted to really show their commitment so that he would stick around for the long haul. So if you feel like you have to give him some kind of extension, how many years is it and what dollar amount is it before you start to get really uncomfortable?
I would say I would have been, if I were them, I would have been comfortable with 3 years, maybe $85 million.
That's exactly what I was thinking, like 3 years, $75-80 million. Yeah. And that's the thing too, is that if you're stretching past, like, let's just play this out. Let's just say that you give him 3 years, $75 million, or 3 years, $80 million, and he looks really good, but he also has some injury problems. After this season, you can trade him on a 3-year, $80 million deal, because my bet is another team is going to be willing to pay him a little extra to have a 2-year risk. A 2-year risk a team can handle under that dollar amount. But the problem is that if he goes 2 years now and still struggling with the injury problems, you're looking at 3 more years and a ton of cash, and now you can't trade him because this is a trend now. He's officially injury prone after that many years in the NBA and 3 years left on his deal, and he can't stay healthy, and you've eaten up a ton of cap space as well on this contract. I can't stress this enough. I love Joel Embiid. I love the upside of him, but I do not love this contract. This seems like an unnecessary risk for the 76ers, a team that's still struggling to try and get into relevance outside of the hype, right? Outside of the preseason hype. They're still trying to get relevance, and so this seems like an unnecessary risk for this team. What say you?
I would say yes, it is unnecessary. But at the same time, if you're the 76ers, I do understand that you need to establish one who you need to establish with this player, like, yes, you are going to be the future of this organization going forward. Is that the digits and the numbers I would have used to establish that? Maybe not. But at the same time, you do need to establish with your young guys, like, hey, this is the face of the organization. This is what we want to do going forward, and we want you to help take us there. If I'm the 76ers coach, I might set time off for Joel just so that it's like, hey, this might not be as big as the game. Why don't you take the night off? I would maybe factor in a few days where you give him days off so that these injuries don't occur. And that's the problem with the 76ers, like, just injuries. I feel like if they had a healthy team, throughout 82 games, totally different results. But I mean, you have to account for them, and we'll see. Is 31 games enough of an indicator to see how good this guy will be? Again, only time will tell. I feel like I'm saying that a lot, but in the sports world, it really rings true. Only time will tell on how these players will do it.
You're absolutely right, and you're right too that this team is desperate to find some identity outside of trust the process. Right? They don't want to be known for the team that just is continually rolling the dice on these high draft picks. They want to be associated with really good players and with winning, and they want to have Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons and Markelle Fultz be really good and have them be the face of the franchise and not somebody standing next to all the ping pong balls and hoping that it's the 76ers coming out with the number one pick again, right? They need a new identity as a team, and so that's another thing that this gives them, is hopefully this makes Joel Embiid the face of that franchise. But it is definitely a risk, and it'll be very interesting now to see how this pans out. And the response, too, if you're a 76ers fan and they just gave him all that money and they have all these picks and it falls flat and you have a couple injuries and you're looking down the barrel of another terrible, terrible season come December, about midway through, what's your response to that? How do you feel about this franchise? How do you feel about the organization and how they're setting stuff up? It's going to be very interesting to see how this all pans out for the 76ers. And they keep staying in the news. I'll give them that. I'll give them that as credit. They keep staying in the national kind of picture.
I would agree. And you know what? This is a team that looks to be more exciting than it has been in a long time. The last big name player, I'm trying to think. Last big name player to come out of Philadelphia. I mean, well, like not come out of, but like, would it be Andre Iguodala? Like, I really can't think of like a really big name player that like people came to see. And you know what? For an organization, one, you're trying to fill seats, and two, you're trying to get some playoffs postseason. I think this is a team with experience; they could do that. But they're also they're definitely filling seats. You're pulling in a first round draft pick in Markelle Fultz. You got Joel Embiid. You're going to have the three-point shooting of J.J. Redick. It's going to be an exciting season. I think they're slowly starting to put the pieces together. It's if the pieces can remain in place, if they're just so, you know, like with injuries. But I think they're setting themselves up for a fairly lucrative, might not be the best word, but I think that they can find success in what they're doing. But I don't know, man. $148 million is a lot of money.
That's
a lot of money, Fulton.
That's definitely more than I'm making right now. I can promise you that. That's more than I have in the bank.
Just
by a slight margin. One last question I have for you before we head out here. If you're the 76ers, which guy is most important to you? We've seen in the preseason Ben Simmons lighting it up with the passing. Markelle Fultz, obviously, his versatility in college was a big point of emphasis. And Joel Embiid, obviously, his scoring, his matchup problem that he presents in the 31 games. Gosh, it's such a small amount of games to play in. Only 31 games, but he presented such a big matchup problem just because of all he can do while playing the center spot. Which guy is the most important? Which guy can you really not see go down if you're a 76ers front office guy?
I would say that as of right now, well, seeing what Ben Simmons is doing, it would really suck to see Ben Simmons go down, but it would hurt you the most to see Joel go down. And that's just because with wrapping so much money up in one player, it limits you to what you can do. And I think, from a playing standpoint, I think Joel has a higher ceiling as of right now than Ben. I really like Ben in the offense. Ben looks really good. But I would have to say Joel, just because of the money that they have on him and the expectation that he's going to have, especially now coming into the season, I don't think there's anyone else that you kind of need right now than your franchise tag player, really.
No, yeah, that's a great way to look at it, that you don't want to see all that money go down for sure. That would be kind of adding insult to injury, pun intended. Also, I preface that question by saying front office guy. Yes, I am a professional in broadcasting. No, I, uh, I was actually thinking Ben Simmons might be, if he's truly as good of a passer as he looks to be and is promised to be by so many people that have really studied his game, he might be the guy you don't want to see go down, because if Joel goes down or if Ben Simmons goes down, I feel like the offense might kind of stop with Fultz and Embiid. And if Markelle Fultz goes down, as promising as he looked, we really don't know what we're going to get with him. But we have seen, I know it's only summer league and preseason games, but we have at least seen what he can do passing the ball. And if Embiid goes down, if Fultz goes down, you still have Ben Simmons getting everybody else, making everybody around him better and getting everybody involved. So he might be the most important player on this team, even after Embiid's contract. And I know that sounds crazy. All the fans can give me all the crap they want to on Twitter and reach out to me and tell me how stupid I am, but Simmons is, he looks to be like he's going to be the guy that makes everybody else better and is going to elevate the play of everybody around him. And if that goes down and they're stuck with just Joel Embiid trying to win games on his own, that might be a real problem for this team. So I think if you're a 76ers fan, that's the guy that you don't want to see go down at all costs.
I agree. He looks, as I said before, he looks really good in the offense. The only reason why I'm putting Embiid in front of him is just because of the price tag.
All right, Brandon, you got anything you want to add? Any thoughts you want to throw out there? Any bold predictions before the season goes underway?
I will say this, and we didn't really get to touch on it, and we didn't talk about it since the last time I was here, but as old as the man is, I really enjoy Dwayne Wade so far in the preseason, and it's gonna be an exciting season.
I should have known you were gonna say that.
A lot of pieces move. Yep. I will say this though, it's a little frustrating because now I think NBA 2K the game and the NBA, I think they're in cahoots, man. You're spending so much money buying the new one every year. You have to. Huge roster changes.
They already know that they have your money just every single year, no matter what happens. But I should have known you were going to say Dwayne Wade, because you are the ultimate Dwayne Wade apologist. You have all the Dwayne Wade stock. You've purchased it all.
I have that. What the 76ers just spent on Joel Embiid, I have spent on Dwayne Wade.
I love it. Hey, you know what? You stick to your guns no matter what happens, and I appreciate that about you, Brennan.
And I'm going down blazing.
Going down with the ship. I love it. Alrighty. He's Brennan. I'm Colton. And this has been another Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99. And our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.